Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here on The Mark Steiner Show. Remind you on our way to this conversation, The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ Baltimore's Credit Union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ Baltimore's Credit Union has been helping its members and its community prosper for the last 80 years. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org is MeQ Baltimore Credit Union's banner. We're going to spend the time in this next part of our program talking about the film Moonlight, which I saw Saturday night. Mm-hmm. It was Saturday night, wasn't it? Yes.
Yeah.
And I say that only because Kalima Young was also in the same theater I was. She's in the studio now. Kalima is a lecturer in electronic media and film at Towson University and a doctoral candidate at the University of Maryland College Park in American Studies. Yeah. Good to have you with us here in the studio once again.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Abdul Ali is musician and writer, creative director of Kalan, who was on our show the other week talking about that. Good to have you with us as well, Abdul.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And y'all can join us here at 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at talk@steinershow.org by email. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. And the tweets have been pouring in since it went out that we were going to have this conversation. And we'll read some of those at the very top of the hour as well and hear a clip in just a moment. But 410-319-8888. Cricket Arison, one of my former producers and a creative genius in her own right, tweeted in, it is so well made and subtle, I had almost given up hope that new movies could be so good.
Wow.
And I do agree with her, Kalima. I think before we get into the heart of this, we'll play a clip in a moment, is that, well, we can take a step for a moment. You can describe what the film is a bit, if you could.
Okay.
But also that it is true to what I've seen about, one of the things that hit me about this film is that it is so well made,
yeah.
Well shot, mm-hmm. The script, the way the pictures were shown, the interacts, the acting, and the way actors were directed, the way they performed in this film, it was almost done, even though it is a black film talking about many black love in some senses and many other things,
mm-hmm.
It's made in a mode of European films I've not seen in a long time for its subtleness, for its mm-hmm. quietude that you don't see often in American films.
Hmm.
So, I'll flick at you. There you go.
Oh, my goodness.
Hit it back.
I will hit it back to you. I will wrest it from the hands of the Europeans and put it back where it needs to be with a black
right.
filmmaker and a black cast.
It's there, too, but one doesn't live without the other in this world.
I know. I think one of the things that people are noting, I think this moment of like, whoa, what's going on? This feels different. It's the fact that we have a subject matter that's about black love. It's about black masculinity. It's about sexuality. It's about intimacy, tenderness, memory, all of these things, family, some elements of things that we can all agree on, like everyone's mm-hmm. need for love and intimacy. That's a universal concept.
Mm-hmm.
And it does it, and it's devoid of the genre that it would generally be in, which would be melodrama.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So the genre, especially in American filmmaking, that where we are most used to seeing these kinds of emotions and these kinds of universal themes, are generally in a space of melodrama. And melodramas work on questions of Oedipal complex. They work on issues of like universal love and family and friendship. But they also, a key element of melodrama is excess emotion. And that's what makes Steel Magnolias and Terms of Endearment and all of these films that are about these universal themes that we can all get behind. That's what we're used to seeing. And this film wrests those universal themes away from the genre of melodrama by not focusing on excess. But also, but focusing on what, there's a theorist named Kevin Quashi. He has this idea of the sovereignty of quiet. The sovereignty of quiet. That in those spaces of quiet is resistance,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think that's what bleeds through the text. So one, it's not a melodrama, so you don't have the excess emotion. Two, it's relying on a very black resistance through quiet, through mm-hmm. reservation, through moments of solitude, and that is often not explored in black narratives, especially if it's black narratives that involve black men in urban settings. So I think we have a confluence
that's
of
really
things that
yeah.
are going on
yeah,
with
yeah,
this
yeah,
film
yeah.
that sort of set that tone that everybody's just like, oh, this feels like Antonioni or something. And I'm like, hold on. We're just doing something a little different.
Right. But that, right. I completely agree. With what that film did.
Yeah.
And that's why I guess it was just so explosive because mm-hmm. you don't see films like this. an amazing kind of sensibility.
No, it's not quiet very much anymore.
I mean, you call
it very quiet.
I'm glad you see, because I use that.
The sovereignty of quiet.
I love that.
Small spaces is resistance.
I have to study that.
Right.
I'm going to study that. Not you said it.
Good.
Abdul, go ahead.
Yeah, one of the most striking things for me in the film was the silence. And when I think of silence or silent moments, in my life or in life in general, I always see them as moments of clarity and transparency and moments where bias is gone. And I think that's what the director, Barry Jenkins, wanted to achieve. I remember reading something saying that he said this movie was about humanity. And for me, you know, the context of the film is very relatable. I'm a queer black man. And a lot of those experiences the characters was going through, I went through myself. But for me, it humanized me, the viewer, and it also, I feel like, it humanized the characters as well through the silence, through the moments of emotions from all the artists, I mean, all the actors. And I feel like each character in the film had a chance to be humanized, and no character was necessarily demonized or, you know, so beaten down where you didn't see them as human anymore. I wrote a piece about this, actually, one of my favorite lines in the piece is, Jenkins, the director, did not exploit me. Instead, he let me breathe.
Yes.
And I feel like a lot of times you see us in films like this, it's often trauma porn.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like this was done differently. It wasn't exploitive. It wasn't trauma porn.
No, it wasn't. I think all the characters, I love the way they were all so nuanced. I think that Mahershala Ali, I say his name correctly?
Right? Mahershala
Ali.
Mm-hmm.
His character, Juan, it was so well done. I mean, let's play the clip of that. I think that's clip. We have that clip ready to roll. Can we do that? Let's play this and we'll talk about this when we come back.
I've been here a long time. And I'm from Cuba. A lot of black folks in Cuba. You wouldn't know that from being here, though. I was a wild little shorty, man. Just like you. Running around with no shoes on, when the moon was out. This one time, I run by this old lady. I was running, hollering, cutting a fool, boy. This old lady, she stopped me. She said, running around, catching a boy that light. In moonlight, black boys look blue. You blue. That's what I gonna call you. Blue.
Say your name, Blue.
Nah.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you gonna be. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
So, again, you hear the silence, you hear the quiet, you hear the depth of philosophy in the characters' words. All the characters have this inside of them, and these ones, whether they're crack addicts or whether they're drug dealers or whether they are women trying to live their lives, whoever that may be, high school students.
Mm-hmm.
You hear the quiet. Ooh. You could hear the quietness with the ocean just roaring and the moment to be still and hear it. And I think that was just so emblematic. And later on, this character, Juan, says when he's asked by the kid, are you
a drug dealer?
He asks him a question of being, you know, what does faggot mean, he says.
Mm-hmm.
And then Juan's character goes, that's a bad word.
That people use for gay people.
For gay people. Just having him say that in that way to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, are you a drug dealer?
Mm-hmm.
But without giving much of it away here, I mean, that's the power of this film.
Right.
I mean, the way it was written, the way people are even shot physically, you talked about that when we saw each other at the theater Saturday night. I'm just really blown away by this. Maybe I was just really, really blown away by this film.
Right. It's a really beautiful focus on the inner life of black folk. right? In those moments of stillness, in those moments of intimacy, in those moments of sort of these philosophical moments, sort of wanderings, we see this inner life of blackness that we're not used to seeing. If you're going to get the inner life of blackness, it's going to be in prophet. It's going to be in some kind of prophecy. It's going to be in some large, huge expressiveness, right? Because one thing that people say that's synonymous with black culture is expressiveness. This movie is just like, actually, something that's synonymous with black people is the intimacy of the quiet moment where our inner lives exist, that are our own and not owned by anyone else. And that's what we're getting a glimpse of in that scene on the beach. While it's shot with quiet and the sound of the ocean and their inner ruminations and him taking his time, he's not doing extra in that scene. He's not doing extra performance that's very loud. He's keeping it very reserved. And if you have the character, this young boy, Little, who says everything in his eyes, his response isn't his words. His response is his eyes and his expression, right? This is where you really delve in, do a deep dive into the inner life of blackness. I don't know. Abdu, your thoughts?
Sorry. That's all. I was about to say the same thing.
Okay. I'm just taking it all in. Because every time I talk to people about this film, I hear something new, and that's what I love about it, the conversation post-film. And which is really rare from American films as well. Like, after you see a lot of movies, you know, today you don't really go home with something. And I feel like this film definitely gave something people to go home with. And every time I talk to somebody about this film, I hear such really profound new perspectives on it, you know.
Folks, do join us at 410-319-8888. Have you seen the film? I do encourage you to see it if you have not. But if you have seen the film or even just want to comment on what you've read about it, please join us at 410-319-8888. You can email us at talk@steinershow.org, tweet us at Mark Steiner. I posted a tweet last night saying that, have you seen Moonlight yet? Valerie and I loved it. Tomorrow at 11, Abdu Ali and Kalima Young discuss the powerful new film. And we had a lot of tweets come back. And so, and I read one already, and two came in. Mark Allen Williams tweeted in, "It manages to tell a whole range of stories that go untold in our cinema and in our culture. The writing and acting make it impossible to look away." Mm. And then Tom Stromer tweeted in, "Loved it." I'll get some other tweets that came in as well. But I think the first tweet here from Mark Allen Williams manages to tell a range of stories that go untold in our cinema and our culture. The writing and acting make it impossible to look away is exactly right.
Yeah, no, that's. I was talking to my wife a little earlier, and she was talking about, I can't remember which magazine. It might have been a New York Times or New York Post or something interview, where at one point the writer describes this story as taking place in a drug-ridden neighborhood in Miami, and someone's response being like, there were literally two people doing drugs and two drug dealers. Why is that drug-ridden, right? And it's one of those things that people, the larger world, tries to fit sort of black community into a specific narrative. In the same area that you have your drug dealers, you also have the school teacher who's going to work. You have the carpenter. You have the entire life of communities. We can't fit this story into one particular narrative. And I think that's what causes a bit of a disconnect for folks at times.
And I think
we have these ranges of small stories that are happening in between. What does it say about this neighborhood that you only see two drug dealers and one, like, car with the mom and her boyfriend basing in it, right? What does it mean that entire lives are going on in this full black neighborhood?
Sorry. Go ahead.
No, my bad. I apologize. Also, me and my friends made a note about how, like, you know, black films where there's a drug dealer, etc., the drug dealer is always demonized or like this bad like character. But in this movie, you saw the other side of somebody who is in a circumstance they feel like they have no other option to do, and yet they are sensible people. They love, they empathize, etc. Mm. And usually you don't see that persona of a black man, a black drug dealer, in films like that.
Right. He literally cried after Little. after little, ask them, are you a drug dealer? Yeah. And my mom does drugs, you know?
And, right. And I think that's one of the things that we're going to get a call in here right now. But let me just say that's one of the things that I think what you talk about sometimes, Kalima, in all this is like missing in a series. People argue with me a lot that I like The Wire. I thought it was very powerfully done and well written, and a lot was there that needed to be there for America to see. But one of the things that was missing to me mm-hmm. in The Wire and things like that was what we're describing here,
mm-hmm.
which is that quiet, which is that humanity, which is the space people live within.
Right.
That takes place in communities we call drug-ridden.
Right.
As if that's the only thing that exists inside of a community or
right.
a neighborhood, right?
Right. Having grown up in West Baltimore, I know very clearly in the Junction, I know real clear that I was just going to school and other people were just going to church. And yeah, there was that drug dealer on the corner as well.
Right. Exactly. No, exactly. So I think that's the power of this filmmaker. The way it was shot as well. One of the things you commented on very quickly, Kalima, then I'm going to get ready to the phones, and Bill, we're going to come to your call right here, is that very few people get lighting when it comes to black folks in terms of lighting a film.
Right.
That was, I think, glaring in this film as well.
Yeah.
In a very positive, beautiful sense.
Right. It was one of those things. It's one of the reasons I come back every single week to Queen Sugar. right? Is that when I can
TV
see...
TV series. Yeah.
Right? When I can see a series that actually knows how to light the beauty of black skin, especially dark black skin, and show the nuances of the color and the shading and use the backdrop and the natural light behind it and the costuming to show the full range, right? It's once again, it's the inner life of blackness, but it's shown in the palette of the film that works with that concept of blue, that works with the concept of darkness, that knows how to sort of breathe life into the palette of black.
I wanted to get that out because when you said that to me, it was just great. Post-film conversation we had at the theater where Kalima said that. Let me go to the phone. See, a lot of number of people are calling in. 410-319-8888. And Bill, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, first, let me just say hello to everybody.
Hey, Bill.
And unfortunately, I didn't like the movie at all.
Okay.
I mean, nothing. I mean, you know, now, I still respect some of the compassion that the drug dealer had for the boy and some of their conversations. But, you know, to me, this is not to be harsh or nothing. You know, just like you have black films that push drugs and violence. And, I mean, to me, this was just push in terms of pushing homosexuality on the black community. Personally, I mean, that's how I view the movie. So I didn't like the movie, and I wouldn't, you know, it's no movie I would suggest for nobody to go and see.
Bill, thanks for your thoughts. Always good. Let's have a response. Abdu?
What? yeah, I don't even.
Well, let me put it out this way. I think I said to you in the theater that night, mm-hmm. there'll be a lot of people, Kalima, I said there are a lot of people who would see this film and have the reaction that Bill has, which is, you know, that first being the thought that anything that beyond heterosexual love is something foistered on us
right.
by some outside force.
Right, and I think that comes from a very, very unfortunate place where mm-hmm. people don't acknowledge that black gay people have existed since the beginning of time. Don't you sit in that
right.
church and listen to the organist and not acknowledge the fact that that organist might be queer, right? Don't sit in the midst of black history and our black culture and not realize right. the contribution that black queer people, black same gender loving people, black LGBTQ people, however you want to identify yourself, have to creating black culture.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly.
just because we have a film, films that show that
Which
we
is rare.
Exist... Right? We exist. Hey. Does not mean it's being foist upon us.
Also,
yeah. Sorry.
Go ahead. We have a lot of callers. I'm going to try to get them in the next 5-10 minutes we have. So go ahead, Abdu.
Oh, I just wanted to say that I never felt like in my lifetime have I ever been. Due to the world where we live in, where homophobia, transphobia, queerphobia is so present, so violent, so blunt, I never felt that anything in media voice homosexuality on me. That's all I
right.
can say.
So I'm going to get to the phone. So a lot of people are calling in. I want to get their thoughts before we end the time we have left. 410-319-8888. Tammy, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Hi, Tammy. I was listening. I did not see the film itself, but what I'm operating off of is your commentary and your guest. My argument about, excuse me, about black communities, I think that was kind of, in the comments that I've been hearing, it's sort of stereotypical that this and that is happening. But since this film did happen in Miami, are we talking black across the board, as in Latino, as well as African Americans? Because in Miami, the drug trade would not be necessarily to the American African Afrocentric individual. And what's going on, and why some of these people are dealing drugs.
Okay.
And the humanity is that many people are not trying to buy, I'm running up the steps, are not trying to buy a drug, not trying to buy large cars and houses. They're simply trying to feed their families.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the film itself didn't, Juan, the one character, is Afro-Cuban, but I mean, it's in the black community, and I think that that's part of the humanity of this film. It was about the drug dealer himself, Juan's character, or the main character who goes into the business himself,
right?
For lots of complex reasons.
It's it sort of talks about the cycle of poverty. You know, it talks about the cycle of poverty. It talks about the cycles of oppressions that contribute to informal economies, right? And that's what you see. And that even a young person who doesn't put on the persona of toughened, hardened, or sort of stereotypical understanding of what a drug dealer will do, this is the nature of living in an oppressed space. This is the nature of people looking for alternative ways to make money. This is the nature of people who have some kind of record or carceral background and where they get funneled into and the cycles of poverty that you see. So if anything, it critiques the cycle of poverty that creates the cycle of poverty and oppression that create the informal economy that folks fall into versus the fact that people do this. But then we see Kevin later on, who's just like, yeah, what are you doing? I work as a cook. I don't make a whole lot of money. I'm okay where I am. You know, let's think about that. So there are these sort of nuanced dialogues about how we pull ourselves out of cycles of oppression. I don't know.
Very well said. Let's go back to the phones at 410-319-8888. Let us hit, Kiara, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, how you doing? My name is Kiara.
Kiara, how are you?
I haven't seen the movie yet, but, you know, because Abdu is my friend, I decided to listen in on a, you know, on a radio comment. And I just wanted to, you know, based off of listening to you, let me start over. We had a conversation on Thanksgiving, and my family is, you know, an educated black family. You know, a lot of us are, you know, young, just starting out going to college, and most of them are males. And they was like, well, let's go see it. And the first thing that the younger male said, you know, was like, oh, I heard that's just a gay movie. You know, it's just about, you know, gay people. But hearing the conversation, I want y'all to, you know, highlight the fact that it's just not about, a gay person and, you know, their, you know, struggles and gayness. But it's also about our culture, you know, and the fact that it actually depicts our culture in a positive way, not in a way that is stereotypical. You know, a lot of times you see...
We only have like 2 minutes left, so let me get our guests to jump in. I apologize, Kiara, but for interrupting you. But
I'm just gonna as a quick answer to that. Gay people and black people are the same thing. These aren't separate, you know. So yeah, it's a movie with black people, and guess what? Those black people are gay. And look, it's a movie with gay people, and guess what? Those gay people are black. Right? There is no gay movie. It's a movie about black gay people.
It's about humanity.
And I think...
black humanity.
And it's about humanity writ large, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's... It's not... To me, this is not... You could pigeonhole this movie as a black film, as a gay film.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than that.
Well...
And it comes from that, but it's more than that.
And
it talks to all of us.
And I think that the reason that we want to do that is because we cannot seem to break ourselves out of these binary understandings of identity.
Exactly.
Right. We just can't seem to break ourselves out of making whiteness a default norm and everything else is in a category of some sort. So let's work on that.
Yeah, we need to work on that. So let's try to get one quick call in here. Will, you're on the air. A very quick thought, Will.
So fast. Listen, I grew up in the hood. I'm from Baltimore. I grew up in West Baltimore. And what
What's
I wanted
up?
To
What's
say up? To everybody was that, you know, sometimes, you know, growing up, you know, the drug dealers who were riding around in the new Benzes and Jaguars, they were El Ghetto messiahs. You know, like, when I grew up, I always thought that, you know, that was the right way to live. That was the right thing to do, you know, until I actually ended up getting incarcerated behind selling drugs. But what I wanted to say to everybody is that I do have a series that's coming out called Dope Genie. It's going to be on YouTube.
Okay.
It's going to be a good film. It's based on my little sister, Gina Conway, who was involved with the Max B incident as far as Dipset and everything. So you guys check it out. It'll be out in December. I'm looking for actors and actresses.
I appreciate what you want to try to get in here. You didn't have to hang up on him, but I just wanted to have to just interrupt because we're out of time. But send us some stuff if you're interested in what you're doing. Let us know more about that. Let me thank our guests here. Kalima Young, great to have you in the studio.
Of course, thank you.
Lecturer in electronic media and film at Towson, and Abdu Ali, music writer and creative director of Kalan. Good to have you with us, Abdu.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you all for calling in and tweeting in. Leave you with this kind of tweet. Awesome flick, says Edward, as he tweeted in, and we all agree. See Moonlight, I think, is one of the best films of the year that I've seen in a long, long, long time.
Indeed.
We have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have these continuing conversations about the death of Fidel. We're going to be talking to Dr. Aviva Chomsky about the life and legacy of Fidel Castro. Stay with us.